Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight for this review of the news. The discussion was great yesterday with Ryan Dawson. I hope you watched it yet because it was awesome to have his perspective on the Ukraine conflict. I've seen on Coach Red Pill the claim that the satellite photos I was talking about in Bucha would have been given on the wrong date. They would truly be pictures after the Russian withdrawal rather than before, as claimed by the New York Times. I've seen the claim, but I don't have enough of a good confirmation. They say that they've studied the shadows and that the shadows indicate that it was taken in April 1st rather than March 21st, but this technique doesn't seem sufficient for me to conclude that it's truly April 1st, so we'll have to wait for further evidence. But the claim is out there right now that the pictures of the satellite indicating the bodies on the floor would have been taken later than claimed in the New York Times. Unfortunately, it's very hard to verify this. Testicle says, is that the alt-hype Ryan? No, it was Ryan Dawson yesterday. Ryan Dawson from ANC Report. The conflict is continuing. India condemns the killing in Ukraine's Bucha in apparent hardening of stance. There's now a complete withdrawal of the forces of Russia around Kiev, and the conflict has refocused around Dnipro. We've seen some degree of aerial attacks onto Dnipro, and we've seen conflict around the border here to expand Luhansk and Donetsk. The conflicts are all across this border, and of course the progression that was made to Kherson at the very beginning of the war. That is the current situation. Libs of TikTok reports there is a school out there that just issued new procedures for trans students, stating that school staff will not disclose any information that may reveal a student's transgender status to others, including caregivers. That's the leftist word for parents. So name and gender changes will be kept confidential. So basically, we have these schools making policies to ensure that your child can live as a transgender without you ever knowing. So as part of these policies, they will be referring to the child as a male or female. As a female if he's a male, and as a male if he's a female. And then they're going to hide it from you. So there will never be a discussion with the teacher about their behavior. So that means basically the school has free reins to completely convert the child toward the other sex. There is no verification of this process, and in fact there is an active hiding of the information to the parents. We've seen a lot of videos of Ukrainian soldiers brutalizing people, civilians, and so I don't know exactly why do they do this, but apparently this is at the middle of Ukraine, behind Ukrainian lines. You know, it's not a place where there are Russian soldiers, and yet they attack civilians like this. They arrest them, they are totally violent against them. They hit them on the head, they kick them with the foot. It's horrible, and it makes me believe that yes, these people could kill civilians. Although I cannot confirm in Bucha exactly who killed the civilians, the so-called civilians, because one note I didn't mention yesterday is all civilians, all male civilians in Ukraine have been made into soldiers. So they have been conscripted. So there's not really a male civilian right now in Ukraine. Either they will join the Ukrainian army, as they are ordered to by law and as they are forced to because they can't escape the country, or they will be treated as traitors. So that the Ukrainian army looks at any male who's not in their team as a traitor, because they are forced by law to be fighting. So when they see males of a certain age, as long as they're below 60 and above 18, it's a free-for-all. They will shoot them if they claim to be civilians, because there's no such thing as a civilian left in Ukraine. You're either a woman, then you can be a civilian, or you're a male, and then you are conscripted. Join me on Entropy tonight if you would like, although I tend to now favor Odyssey as a platform for super chats. Entropy's link is in the description below, and our survey tonight is, do you think Elon Musk will save Twitter and implement free speech? I would love to dream, but I know that I'm always disappointed by the universe. And I'm afraid that Elon Musk is not based enough to undertake what he's currently undertaking at Twitter. I'm afraid that he will have half measures that will not fix the issue of free speech on Twitter. It's too bad, but I think it is that way. Or if you don't want to join on Entropy, feel free to use the support button on Odyssey. Odyssey is my favorite platform for super chats. Traders wake up to Le Pen risk as French election polls tighten. So we have seen the surveys indicating that Marine Le Pen is at 48.5%, whereas Macron is at 51.5%. Those are extremely tight numbers, and so what we're looking at, first, I'm disappointed to see, I don't follow the French election, but Zemmour seems to not be scoring in these surveys. It's too bad. I haven't followed this campaign, but I would have been enthusiastic about him winning. But these numbers indicate that Marine Le Pen at the first round could very well have very close to Macron and could eventually beat Macron on the second round. That being said, it's hard. It's hard for a candidate like Marine Le Pen because she is smeared, she is tarred in the media, the problem is there's going to be a lot of people wanting to vote for her on the first turn, and then the media will totally dump on her everything they can and everything they have, and after this, that might chill the vote for the second round. So I'm not super positive about her winning. And on top of it, I think that she's given up so much of her program that at this point she's now a generic populist. And the Front National isn't what it used to be. And so at this point she's just a mainstream politician. She has diluted herself so much that there's no more nationalism left in her. So she did that because she thought that was needed to win. But at the same time, if you wash yourself away from any sort of quality, any sort of difference, then what's the interest of having you win this election? Zelensky, there is no security in the world for anyone. Shut up, Zelensky. We're totally secure. In NATO countries, there is not a risk that Putin will want to go through the extremely costly operation of trying to dominate a NATO country. You're trying to bring us in your security problems and you fail because we're totally safe. You are bullshitting the world. Good job for this whole carpet salesman attitude, but you fail. U.S. Secretary of State arrives in Brussels ahead of high stakes NATO foreign ministers meeting. And they're now uncovering town by town the horrors of Russian occupation. Of course, there are questions about to which extent all of the horrors we see, have they been committed by the Russians? What is the evidence for this? we typically don't see anything. We see an assumption. We see a presumption that it must be the Russians. Naberius says, we've been disappointed by the universe so regularly that we're due for a term. It's the gambler's fantasy, but I'm still hopeful. Haha. It's very tempting to adopt the gambler's fantasy. It's like, oh, I've lost so much, I can only win now. But that applies to our political situation, yes. Zelensky demands Russia be expelled from UN Security Council. Ukrainian President Zelensky, in a dramatic video appearance at the United Nations, called on the body to remove Russia from the Security Council days after evidence circulated of executions and atrocities by Russian troops in his country. We are dealing with a state that is turning the veto in the UN Security Council into the right to die, Zelensky said in his remarks. This undermines the whole architecture of global security and allows them to go unpunished. Well, America again and again has done this. When the US went on to a war in the Middle East that the rest of the international community wasn't happy about, they were vetoing all of the resolutions that were to their disadvantage. So if you kick out Russia for doing this, you're really showing the asymmetry in this body, that you will allow the US to do certain things, but you won't allow Russia to do the same. Because voting in line with your interest and using the veto right of the UN Security Council is something that America has done again and again. Because when they were going for wars like Iraq and all of the other countries wanted to write resolutions against this, never did the UN Security Council ended up adopting any of these resolutions because America would veto them. So you got the same thing here. You're playing a game that is designed to be symmetric, but whenever the game doesn't please you, whenever the events in the game don't please you, you're asking for a change of rule, a change of rule that would advantage the US and disadvantage Russia. It's ridiculous, and I hope it doesn't happen. I think the chances are low. As long as the conflict remains inside Ukraine, and perhaps if there's no evidence of stuff like biological weapons or nuclear weapons, as long as we stay there, I think it's very unlikely that Russia could be expelled from the UN Security Council, because we've seen so much pressure being put on Russia, don't use chemical weapon, don't use nuclear weapon, that all Vladimir Putin has to do is say, okay, I'm not going to use any of these. I'm going to do conventional warfare. But the reality that is often not mentioned in these discussions is that conventional warfare is perhaps by orders of magnitude more horrible than a big strike, say, with a nuclear weapon. A big strike with a nuclear weapon will annihilate everything within a certain radius. The suffering will be extremely short. But conventional warfare, the problem is it's a mix of violence, human suffering, humanitarian concern, food issues, deprivation of goods, and it's a more painful death, really, and the rapes and whatever can happen between humans will happen amplified in conventional warfare. So, and of course, the fact that most of conventional warfare ultimately doesn't kill cleanly, because nothing is precise, you end up with bullets in parts of the body, you survive, you endure the pain, you get executed later as a prisoner, or worse, tortured. The fact is that there's a case to be made for nuclear strikes as being the cleanest form of war, the cleanest form of war. John Drake says, what about criminal Germany taking over Russia's Gazprom? Are you trolling here? I don't think it's a crime for if it's a crime for Germany to buy Russian oil, then it's a crime for every country on this earth to have bought every product they ever bought from the US. So the US relies on a history of eradication of other people, replacement of other people, and regime change all around the world in a much more extensive and regular and cyclical manner than Russia ever did. So if you want to make this case that Russia's gas makes you a criminal, what about American gas and American any product coming from America? Jonathan Dow says, JF, is psychological warfare codified within conventional warfare, or is it outside of conventional warfare? I am no expert on international warfare rules and regulations. Well, I'm no expert either, but you can see references to rapes and suffering of civilians in these international rules and conventions. So I guess that in a way I would answer, yes, it is codified within. It's as part of the things you can't do in the treaties, the various treaties that are signed at the international level are some form of psychological warfare. John Drake says, I think that one went way over JF's head. Well, I always take every chat extremely seriously as if it wasn't trolling. Jonathan Dow is on Entropy. He says, how do you seek justice in a system where the justice authority itself is your persecutor? Is the superficially closed nature of this framing just a demoralization tactic? Personal reflections to fix this? Well, there's no justice. As long as the courts are your oppressor, you won't get justice. There's the principle of appeals court, which could in principle protect you from such violations of your right. But given that appeals court have no power to question the fact-finding at the tribunal level, then the whole system is ridiculous, because the judge can just write it in a way that it's not going to be appealable, and that's what they do always. So no, there is no justice in the current system, and the thing you can do is you can run, you can switch place, you can escape and create a better life for yourself, and you can think for the rest of your life, all right, this place has judges that oppress people. It's going to pay the price long term. They're going to be in trouble. They're going to lose all of their brightest people who are being targeted in these courts, and eventually they will be filled with the sewer level people that they deserve. Eventually they get what they fucking deserve. That's how you can convince yourself that there is some ultimate justice in the world. Tillman says, JF, Germany stole the Russian gas reserve. Ah, okay, that was the explanation of... okay, that if you mean that, I thought you meant that you are a criminal if you take Russian oil and you pay for it. But what you're saying is that Germany took Russian oil and didn't pay for it. Well, in that case, yes, I would say yes, there is a crime there. Well, a crime, it's theft. There's been a theft of oil, and yes, it's been happening because these... these countries have been paying in bank accounts, and then they suddenly freeze the bank accounts of Russia, and it's like, okay, we got your gas and you got nothing. Mother who confronted New York City Mayor Adams over a toddler mask mandate fired from city job. Absolutely ridiculous. She was protesting. She was basically exercising her First Amendment right, and she has the mayor remove her from her job. I hope that she gets reinstated, because that seems like a totally unjust firing. But they are totally after the ideological dissent, and that's unfortunate. Disclose.tv says, DirecTV has terminated the One American News Network from its lineup. We already had heard that this was going to happen, but now it happened. OAN, OAN is out of the air. Now, Stevie says the volume seems quite low. I see it going in the red, so it cannot be higher than this. Higher than this, there would be some crunching of the sound, and I don't want this to happen. So perhaps look at your own setup. Perhaps you can change the settings on your video. But as far as I know, I'm as high as is recommended to be. What else do we have today? German Ethics Council sharply criticizes the uncritical reporting of the mass media during the pandemic in a newly released 161-page report. As the pandemic so that's a report that's done about the government of the the government in Germany and how they are currently under an ethics review. They say, as the pandemic progressed, however, even obvious undesirable developments were hardly addressed with the necessary clarity by a journalism that saw itself as constructive or sensitive to the common good. They're basically saying, look, as the pandemic progressed, there was a lot of negative stuff coming out about the vaccine effectiveness dropping, and going into the negative, and we hid this. We hid this to the people. So it's good that some ethics people still care, but the damage has been done. That's the problem with these government manipulation of information. They really don't care about being caught later. They care about having used the opportunity to vaccinate as many people as they could and to misinform as many people as they could, and they've succeeded. So I don't know. Just the Emil Kierkegaard things. So the blog of Emil O.W. Kierkegaard is publishing a comment on a new GWAS study. So GWAS are these massive studies. In this case, it's 3 million individuals, and you look at all of their genes, all of their SNPs, which are single letters of DNA that differ between people. And you look at whether they are linked to the level of intelligence. And we've done this before. We talked about this before. So there's really nothing new coming out. But the studies are getting more and more precise. Look at the... This is kind of a measure of the predictive power everything we know about which letter of DNA predicts which level of intelligence. And look at this. It grows, grows, grows. And now with the current study in 2022 at 3 million individual, we have this predictive power. So from 2013, so in less than 10 years, we have tripled the predictive power of these GWAS. Pretty impressive, because of course the GWAS have always been clear. They've always been pulling extremely strong results that, yes, there is a link between genes and intelligence, but we're now three times more precise at predicting you, given your genes. How intelligent are you likely to be? That's very amazing. Jonathan Dow says, Jeff, would you expect a genetic correlation to vaccine hesitancy? Absolutely. We've seen anyways that the vaccine correlates extremely strongly with whether you take for Ukraine or for Russia. Everyone who's got the vaccine, they were like at 88 or 90% pro-Ukraine. And then the people who didn't get vaccinated, they were only at 13 to 20% pro-Ukraine in their survey answers. So basically, the vaccine is a direct measure of your willingness to submit. And as we have talked with many people in the audience, in my Ask Me Anythings, there are a lot of you guys willing to submit in the regular chat. a lot of vaccine cucks here who have been convinced by society to do what was required of them. Two senior executives resign from Trump's Truth Social startup. The departures come after the troubled launch of the company's iPhone app on February 20, with many still stuck on a waiting list. Man, this is so sad. I hope that they can resolve this, but they had promised that this would all be fully online by March. We're in April now, and it's not out. So basically, Trump probably told some people, you are fired. Is he being exploited by people who don't know what they're doing? It's hard to imagine for a guy who has hosted The Apprentice, which was a show all about detecting the parasites, detecting who's telling you that they're doing good, but they're not doing good, and eliminating them in the process. But it seems that Trump may have been grifted upon here, because you had these people say, we're going to do it, it's going to be easy, it's going to be ready for March, and what do we have right now? Only an iPhone app, not even a web app, not even an Android app. You're not on the track to success. And when things are slow like this, one expects that it's not going to be perfect when it comes out. So John Drake says sabotage. Yes, it's a possibility that essentially people wanted to, perhaps some people had an interest in this not succeeding, and they've sent some of their agents, and their job was to stall the process. This could happen. I don't know. Maybe they're just incompetent also. It's so stunning, because I look at my talents. If I was to dedicate my entire life full time on this, I could program an entire social media platform. I couldn't write my books if I do this, and I couldn't do the show. But clearly, I could do this. And yet I see these guys, they're getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year by Trump. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm the CEO. Oh yeah, and I'm directing this guy. And oh, this guy is directing this guy. Oh, and this guy is directing the computer programmer at the bottom. It's like, I could do this. And yet, I will never end up in the position to do it, simply because there's a whole industry of grifting, an industry of people who go to these rich guys like Trump and who say, we can do it, but they can't. I can, but I won't do it. Pineapple Platypotamus says, there aren't enough awesome people. John Drake says, one man, seriously, I'm a layperson on this. I mean, maybe I'd take a couple of employees. I'd say, you do, give me some CSS, give me this and that. But I could lead the whole thing, and I could do the core. I have all of the knowledge needed. And I see these people like Devin Nunes coming from politics. All he's going to do is sit on his ass. It's like you took someone from politics to lead a tech enterprise. It's not going to work. It's not going to work because all of these people they see themselves as someone is going to do the technical work. I'm here to drain the money. I'm here to attract investors and speak to the media and sit on my ass. The reality of these very successful tech companies that have birthed in the 90s and 2000 is that they were rooted in a technical team first and foremost. There was always the autistic guy in the leadership. Where's your autistic guy, Trump? All you have are posers. So you end up with a platform of posers. And you're a poser also. It's like, come on, man. You need someone with will and extreme intelligence to handle all of the shit that comes out when developing a platform. But you need that guy. You need the autistic psychopath And then, yeah, you can surround him with a looser team and people who do what they're told. But you need the one guy. You don't have him. Jonathan, like, Andrew Tarba is a guy who probably was an unlikely candidate for that role. But he lived up to the hype, you see. Andrew Tarba, I don't know that he's particularly like a genius computer programmer. And yet he decided to do it. He did what he had to do. You need someone like Andrew Tarba. You need someone who's willing to do the dirty work of, oh my God, this platform has to be perfect, and little correction here and there, and technical stuff, and leading the technical team. John Drake says, Trump is still endorsing rhinos, hardly playing 4D chess. Yeah, it's a constant disappointment, but that's always what it is with Trump. Meanwhile, Twitter is rising. I don't know, I'm torn. I'm torn because I wanted Twitter to completely crash, but a hope has arisen on the internet. Elon Musk has bought 9.2% stake in Twitter, making him the largest shareholder. And we have learned today that he is now joining the board of directors. So basically, he didn't have to be part of the board of directors, because at 9.2%, you do not control the company, and so you cannot force yourself onto the board of directors. However, he was invited by Parag Agrawal, because Parag Agrawal said, okay, this guy is a critic of us. He's also a big supporter of us, so we need him on the team, which really is... I think that the deal of bringing him on the board of director is to soften his contribution to Twitter, because Elon Musk could have had the money to do a hostile takeover. He would have paid a heavy tax cost, because the problem of Elon Musk wealth is that it's paralyzed inside shares. So he would have had to sell these shares, or he would have had to somehow exchange them, which would have led to a taxation event. So in theory, he could do it still, because he's so massively rich that he could afford both the tax bill and buying Twitter in its entirety and remain a very rich guy still. So he could, but he chose the path of softness, which tells me he's not ultimately invested in changing Twitter against its will. He wants to convince Twitter to change. And unfortunately, I don't think Twitter can change its culture, because Twitter has been parasitized by extremely evil people, leftists, and a circle jerk of people who live in a completely parallel reality in which basically just being a Republican is an act of violence, and it's bigotry, and it's like they're in fear, and they're literally shaking at the idea of someone being center-right. So what can Elon Musk do in this circumstance? Well, he says he wants to improve Twitter, and that in the upcoming months there will be many changes. Now, I think that he's been tamed. I think he's been whipped by Twitter, because in the deal that brings him onto the board of directors, unfortunately, there is a component of the deal that says, while he is in the board of directors and for up to 90 days after he would leave the board of directors, Elon Musk promises not to be buying Twitter shares for more than 14%. So basically, they've protected themselves against a hostile takeover, because they basically want to negotiate with Elon instead of getting purchased by Elon. This tells me they are already in the mood of normifying Elon. And Elon is always this guy who, we've seen him on Saturday Night Live, he's always acting as if coming from the internet culture. But when he is surrounded by the normies, he becomes a normie himself. He's extremely influenceable, extremely manipulable, amazing that this guy could was able to accumulate that much wealth while being so naive in his kind of social relationships. Unfortunately, it's he has this negative aspect of autism, which is that there are some people who are autistic and they are trusting socially. I'm autistic and I'm like misanthropic. I don't trust anyone. But Elon Musk is autistic and trusting, which makes these people extremely easy to manipulate. Now, I still can have some hope that maybe Elon Musk will be bringing things like, hey, what about the free speech on the question of male and female? Why couldn't someone think that I'm a male, even if I think that I'm a female? Like, how is my thinking imposed on them? How can I force someone to believe that I'm a female and to act as if they thought that I was a female? Maybe he's going to bring some things like this, which would improve Twitter. Maybe he's going to bring the idea of pardon. Like, people have no recourse. I've been permanently suspended from Twitter. For what? Not for a single tweet I've done. For spam practices. And just before they did that, I saw them in the month before they were sending me messages. Your account is behaving weirdly. There was no evidence of my account behaving weirdly. I was tweeting on my computer and on my phone. That's all I was doing. And there was no takeover of my account. There was nothing I could do. So for people like me, how do we appeal? Well, I've done an appeal, they never answered. So what am I supposed to do? Perhaps Elon Musk can fix Twitter for people like me. But I think no matter the amount of fixing, the problem is if you were to fix 90% of Twitter, it would still suck. It would still suck because of the 10% left, because of whatever rule is left that is post First Amendment is basically a control of speech that goes against the Constitution. And that's the problem. The First Amendment is probably just the right place to be, like Gab does. But no matter the amount of fixing that Twitter allows Elon to do, it's going to be less than the First Amendment, I'm sure. Tillman says, JF, do you get any of your Ukraine news from RT.com? I don't often visit RT.com. Sometimes I see links. I mostly browse on Gab, and some people will Gab a RT.com link, and I will find myself on RT.com. However, browsing RT.com from the front page, to be honest, I feel like it's not informative enough. Because although I am relatively sympathetic to the Russian position, I don't like reading stuff that I feel is intentionally censored by Russia or intentionally shaped in a way as to fit Russian censorship. I want pro-Russian positions. I want to read about them and but I don't like when it's done in a subversive way. And I find that sometimes RT.com and the way they cover stuff, there are euphemism in there. And when I see a euphemism, I know that the person I'm reading is not telling me the truth. And I don't like this. That's why I wouldn't use RT.com as a main source of information to do my work. It's because if you use euphemism, if you just parrot what Vladimir Putin says, then you're not giving me access to the truth. I'm not telling you that Vladimir Putin has to lie every time, but I'm telling you if you are just repeating what he says, then you're not informing me. To me, journalism has to be fixated on the idea of truth, and I don't feel that when I go to RT.com, when I see the stories they choose to cover, they don't cover, Jonathan Dow says, Jeff, have you had the time to work on the JFG Matrix space? Well, I have a server. It's up. I've not invited people publicly yet, but I've given the link on the general Discord server. Go in the general section, and if you browse back to like 2 weeks ago, you'll see the link. You can connect. It's up, and I've set it up right on my server right here. But I think it's going to be hard bringing people on there. A true decentralized server like this, even people who were habituated Matrix users had difficulty connecting because they didn't understand that, yeah, you know, the general Matrix servers that you connect to generally, they're not truly decentralized. They're federated. If you want true decentralization, you have to manually put the URL to connect to, and a lot of people were confused with this. So I don't know. It's up. You can go there. You can set it up. I can even give you a moderator power if you want to shape the server. But I don't think it's a platform that's pleasant enough that we would bring most of our audience there. People won't like it. Jonathan Dow says, is your brain more wrinkly than normies' brains? It's a good question. I think there's been some work. Well, there's been definitely some work around the folding of the brain and how it correlates with intelligence across massive amounts of time, across millions of years. So it is believed that our higher intelligence is linked to a bigger brain and a more folded brain. And definitely if you look across species, it seems that behavioral complexity is linked to brain folding. Look at the behavior of a mouse or a rat, very simple, and they have basically smooth brain. You look at monkeys, apes, they have more folds, and it makes sense because the more folds you have, the more neural density you have. You have the space for more layers of neocortex. So the very folding actually probably seeks to just expand the surface area of the outside of the brain. Because of the way the brain develops, the neocortical layers are outside. That being said, I don't know if some work has been done inside the current human species. Are people who have higher IQ, do they have more folds in the brain? I don't know. I'd be surprised if we knew that much. But they probably have some amount of measures of the volume of gray matter and white matter. And so that could correspond to folding. The battle of the century. Here's what happens if Elon Musk buys Twitter. In 2021, Elon Musk created overnight millionaires by pushing the Dogecoin meme. In 2022, he may be gearing up for something far more dramatic. The world's richest man might be on the cusp of launching a global crusade to restore freedom of speech. Given that Twitter serves, so that was the original comment by Elon Musk. That's a very good description of the war that Elon Musk is currently engaging in. He's setting up for a reaction of the system because they explain the system will detect Twitter. They will even, if Elon Musk restores free speech on Twitter, the system will react. The CIA will understand it's a threat for them. The American regime, the globalist regime, will understand that Twitter is a threat. And they will start going after the platform as a whole. But I want to see that war happen, even if that was to mean a final divorce on the internet, perhaps the leftists going to their own sub-platform saying, we're pissed because you don't respect trans rights or something like this. But I'd like to see that fight happen, even if it leads to the destruction of Twitter at the end. Andrew Tarba has published his thoughts on Elon Musk and Twitter. Many people are asking me what my thoughts are on Elon Musk buying 9% of Twitter's stock and joining their board of directors. As I write, this internal chaos and distraction are undoubtedly unfolding at Twitter HQ. All anyone at that company can focus on right now is what is Elon Musk going to do next? This distraction will drag on and linger for months and maybe even years to come. People will rage quit, be fired, transfer teams, or give up projects entirely. It will take a long time for the dust to settle from this. Yes, I think Andrew is right there. There are liberals who say they are terrified about what will happen. Crème de cassis et a data scientist, former astrophysicist, lady, feminist, demisexual, genderqueer, trans woman. Let's see what she thinks. Oh, she is honestly kind of terrified right now. Tear. She calls Elon Musk a prominent transphobe, buying a large stake in Twitter. And it's not at all funny. Just this. Just the fact that the people who have imposed imperialistic control of Twitter, these normies and other people allied together against the original gangsters of the internet like me, who were on Twitter way before any of these people, by the way. People like me have led to the birth of Twitter. People like these have killed Twitter. They have totally destroyed it. So I'm very happy that they're nervous about what will happen, because just this would be enough. If they can just be on their guard, if they can just not know what will happen next, if this guy can scare them a little bit, I'm good. So here this Daily Wire article documents that just before Elon Musk bought Twitter, well, 9.2% of Twitter, he called the Babylon Bee. So it seems that this is all linked ultimately to the Babylon Bee being banned from Twitter. They were banned for designating Secretary Rachel Levine as Men of the Year when Rachel Levine is a trans. And so Elon Musk calls the Babylon Bee. And he says, is it true that you've been banned? I wanted to verify with you that it's true. And then they say, yeah, we've been banned. It's too bad, but we won't delete the tweet because we think it's the truth and it's a good joke. We will stand by it. And Elon Musk says, you know what? I might very well have to buy Twitter to fix this. So that's where it all started. Elon Musk had decided Twitter went too far by banning the Babylon Bee. Jonathan Dow says, Jeff, do you expect human genetic space to bifurcate again over time? What would a future large divergence look like? What would cause it? What would that mean? Neanderthals versus Homo sapiens? Well, one has to be careful in thinking about divergence into the future. Because the reality of life is that what's happening is always a branching. Like, look at the bacteria of today. They probably look very much like the bacteria of 3 billion years ago. And then look at us. We are also descendants of the bacteria. But our branch of life has massively changed with respect to the original bacteria. So it's important to, but the bacteria, the original bacteria are basically still alive with perhaps some degree of evolution, some functions that weren't there before. But in terms of looks and overall behavior, they're probably doing pretty much the same thing they did 3 billion years ago. So never forget that there's not really a divergence through time. What's happening is there is an accumulation of differences. But the original niche also preserves another branch of life. So what's happening is that we can see ourselves, the vertebrates, the mammals, and the apes, we can see ourselves as being just one branch of this process that was faced with changes of niche that brought us forward and brought us where we are. Whereas since the original niche for bacteria still exists, the bacteria themselves, our ancestors, didn't have to change much to maintain themselves into existence. All this to say, you talk of Neanderthals, you talk of Homo sapiens. Ultimately, let's not forget that, say, a completely eradicated life form like Homo erectus. The fact that we say humanity has evolved a lot since our chimpanzee and our common ancestor with chimpanzees is mostly that the stages like Homo erectus and to a certain extent Neanderthal have been abolished. They died. But this dying of a branch of life kind of increased the impression of a contrast. They kind of give you the impression, oh my God, chimpanzee, human, we're very different. But there's everything in between. And these things in between, if the world was just, they would all be equally represented. You would see Homo erectus entering the McDonald's and ordering a McChicken. But you don't see this. So there's so much annihilation and so much death that you end up thinking, oh wow, human, chimpanzee, very different, very distant life forms, because you don't see the in-between. You don't see the continuum, but there is a continuum. We just don't see it. So very often, as we advance through time, there will be changes, but it's very hard to say where will the descendants of humanity be. Because, well, first, it doesn't have to be the case that the planet of the future has a evolutionary niche for us. We're extremely, we're a special kind of thing, you know? We are big mammals. We're kind of wasteful. There's probably much more efficient ways to be a mammal. But we are also extremely inventive, and because of this, we may always find the solution to future challenges from the environment. So I'm hesitating at knowing what will be the future niche, but what I do think will happen is a reduction of intelligence. So I wouldn't be surprised that we'll be, at some point in our future, back to chimpanzee levels. And if the revolutionary phenotype does happen, if we do create a phenotypic revolution, then less than chimpanzee level intelligence. That would be my prediction. Because the big problem of society is we have so much efficiency at transferring the intelligence of one to the service of someone else through the market, through exchange. And exchange ultimately punishes the intelligent. Because that punishes intelligence, because then the genes for intelligence are not needed to survive. As long as you have a market, everything can be purchased. Michael Montfort sends $10. Thank you so much. He says, Jeff, I enjoyed your debate with the Muslim guy the other week. There's something funny about your interaction with people well below your intellectual level, but I thought he was a nice enough fellow, and I hope you continue to mix it up with people in debates. Yes, yes, I think that what you detect is ultimately the naive JF in me, because when I find myself with someone who does like one or two fallacies per sentence and who lies and who's dancing on trying to look okay, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. And yes, a guy of low intelligence, ultimately. I have a fascination. I talk like them, like the neuroscientist that I used to be, the anthropologist, the guy who's just fascinated at monkeys. And so that's how I approach it. So what you see is probably this kind of, because most people who would interact with a guy like this, Nadir, they would interact with him with kind of the high school teenager brain. The kind of, I have to look okay, and oh, I have to respond, and oh, he's saying something false, I have to protect my reputation. And the problem is, I think that there is a kind of specialized dialogue style with these guys like Nadir, where they can totally exploit this. They, by bombarding you with red herrings, by they force to deny so much things, they abuse you with cognitive links that aren't there, with non sequiturs and stuff like this. My approach is much more relaxed. I approach Nadir and I'm like, okay, monkey, dance for me, boy. Like these Western movies where they start shooting on the floor and it's like, dance for me, Marty McFly. That's how I see it. So it's fun and it's more open, and I don't insist on correcting every little bit. Rather, I insist on addressing main points. So I don't want to leave a full point unanswered. But then the fallacies that he drops on an every word basis or every sentence basis, that is something I will not correct because I want to keep it fun. Philosoraptor sends a super chat. He says, can monkeys be domesticated and make good pets? Well, I think you should talk to Cassandra Fairbanks. I think she does that. She has marmoset monkeys that are basically so small you can hold them into your palm. And apparently that's feasible. And bigger monkeys are also domesticable, but eventually some of them will kill you. That's the problem. And a thing like an ape, like chimpanzee, will most likely eventually kill you. If you had something like a gorilla, most likely would end up killing you. If you have something like a rhesus macaque, probably not going to be able to kill you unless you're unlucky and there's some kind of virus or he bites you at the wrong place and you have a bacterial growth and you die. Like, he's not going to rip you in pieces, the rhesus macaque, but it would eventually flee and cause all sorts of problems in your neighborhood, which is why these animals are, you're not allowed to have them, I think. And so domesticable is a big word. What does domesticable mean? If 50% of the chimpanzees end up killing their owner, is that domesticated? What if 10% end up killing their owners? The thing is, and the rhesus macaques, again, probably not big enough. They could kill you. Like, if they're pretty, if they decide to bite you and totally destroy you, they could kill you. But at their size, you have a chance to flee and they might leave you alone. Something like a chimpanzee, you have no chance to flee because he's going to, if he decides to kill you, he can run and get you. The rhesus macaque can also run faster than you, but if you are able to assert some dominance as you flee, and he's not a murderer, he's not going to pursue you extensively, I think. But they can be extremely violent, so the general answer, I guess, would be no. Fully domesticated, none of them. But with a marmoset that you can hold in your hand, I guess that for Cassandra Fairbanks, the risks are minimal. Elon Musk appointed to Twitter board of directors vows to make significant improvements. I've asked tonight, do you think that Elon Musk will be able to restore free speech? Two people say no, two people say yes. I pray that he tries, and if he tries, whether he succeeds or not doesn't matter. At least he's going to initiate a clash with the tech culture of Twitter and of social media, and that's a good progress. I like that it's happening. And then if he succeeds, then perhaps people like me will be back on Twitter. But for now, this doesn't seem to be in the plans. At least I cannot say that there's a schedule where I expect in 3 months or 6 months from now we could go back to Twitter. I don't know. 48 hours after Orbán's landslide victory, the European Union launches punitive rule of law. Orbán has said, "We have won a great victory, a victory so great you can perhaps see it from the moon and certainly from Brussels." The EU Commission has announced Tuesday it will launch the so-called rule of law mechanism against Hungary, which links EU funds to whether or not democracy is being upheld. So they're going after Orban because of the results of the vote. They're always doing this. They've done this in Ukraine. It's like, oh yeah, we're gonna have a vote for the independence of DPR, LPR. And then the vote happens. They don't like the result because it's 90% against their position. And so they're like, oh, we have to. I think that there's been a breach of democracy here. Wait a minute. I thought that we couldn't even talk about breaches of democracy. I thought that that we needed to have respect on our democratic institutions, and that even the mere claim on the internet that maybe something bad happened was bannable, could lead to you being fired, being pursued by the Fed. But no, the EU can do it when Hungary tries to go its own way. Philosoraptor says Hungarian president Viktor something is so awesome. His interview with Tucker is amazing. I didn't know he had an interview with Tucker. I'll go check it. I know that one time Jordan Peterson went there, I believe. I have to check his interview with Tucker, but what I know is that he's standing inside Europe, but a staunch defender of his people and of his perception that certain things of the European Unions are not worth importing into Hungary. And that makes total sense to me. Philosoraptor says conservative, pro-family, pro-community, just amazing guy with excellent English. I didn't know. I've actually never heard him speak English. So I'll go check it out. And finally, as a last news item tonight, 20 facts about the emerging global food shortage that should chill you to the core. A very alarming global food shortage has already begun. One of France's most important government officials is telling us that we should brace ourselves for an extremely serious global food crisis due to Ukraine. Two, Joe Biden recently admitted that food shortages are going to be real. Three, it is being reported that food prices at German supermarkets will soon go up between 20 and 50%. Rationing has already begun in Spain, rationing in Greece. The head of BlackRock is warning that this will be the very first time this generation is going to go into a store and not be able to get what they want. Number seven, since this time last year, some fertilizer prices have gone up by as much 300%. Many farmers in Africa will not be able to afford fertilizer at all this year, and it is being projected that this will reduce agricultural production by an amount capable of feeding 100 million people. Russia is normally also one of the biggest global exporters of fertilizer, blah blah blah. All things that we've reviewed here for many weeks now, so I hope that no one will be surprised. But yeah, it's what will be the ceiling of this? I have no clue. But we will be held by the balls because our survival will be determined by our ability to pay for this food. And so we have to learn to live with not much. And the fact is, if you look at an average family and what they eat and what they buy in America, I think they could live very well with maybe three times less. I think everyone can afford a 3x reduction of what they spend at Walmart and at whatever these food distributors, these grocery stores. So we'll do this, I guess. This is what we'll do. We'll keep paying pretty much the same amount of money we pay for food, but we'll need to get less food and be more clever about the caloric proportion, because people are buying for $5 sometimes these boxes of candy and crap that bring nothing, that they're often extremely light and fluffy. You end up buying basically cardboard and sugar. It's not a clever way to do when for the same amount of money, you could have 10 pounds maybe of potatoes. 10 pounds of potatoes with the same amount of money that you buy fluff, sugar, cardboard, all wrapped in plastics. Mama JF says, we're gonna eat them beans and soy. Well, hopefully not too much. Hopefully we can still... I mean, if you buy meat and vegetables, you have what you need. And the fact is, vegetables are probably like potatoes. A bag of potato is probably the most massive amounts of nutrients you can have for this amount of money. Because potatoes are the crown of the unprocessed vegetable world. I mean, it's a machine. It goes into the ground, and the product comes out of the ground already. Of course, there's some classification and treatment of the potatoes, but it's minimal. Not much wrapping. They just go into a bag. So it says potatoes are the apex in terms of how little investment one has to do to get from nature to a product that is purchasable. So for this reason, most of the time, it's the most intelligent way to invest your money. Mama JF, are you ready for potato year?
Yes. Hey, you know what? There's even protein in potato.
Yes.
I was eating them chips, okay? In a bag of chips, there's like 12 grams of protein.
Well, there you go. It's a living thing, so there will be proteins.
We could just eat chips. You eat 3 bags of chips.
I've never heard of someone dying while having infinite amounts of chips. Never heard.
My God, I didn't know that.
Yes, proteins will be pretty much in everything that's living, because the living cell is filled with proteins. There's no such thing as life, well, not on this planet and not in our current life forms. There's no life without proteins, so there are proteins everywhere. Dark Urza says, Jeff, my calculations for potatoes is that you can grow 20 pounds per dollar. Farmers likely get $13, while the grocery stores sell $1. Okay, but you know, potatoes, the thing is, when you buy them at the moment where farmers are have an abundant amount of them, you'll actually pay much less, because they're looking at getting rid of it at some moments of the year. Jonathan Dow says, Jeff, would you consider debating Andrew Wilson, BPF, on the Crucible on the subject of automation being touted as a solution to societal problems, labor, food availability, etc.? I've already debated BPF here on the show, but it wasn't about this. I don't know if I would debate him, because I don't know what's his position, but I don't have a strong position against automation. So I don't know if I would be ready to fight against automation. I'm against the automation of our genetic evolution, that for sure. But if a company finds a way where it's more viable to automate, I'm not going to complain about it. I'm not going to force you to employ, you know, Mexican farmers, immigrants that come for the summer and work in your field, if an equivalent robot can just go through your field and do it 2 times faster. This is not my kind of argument. So Philosoraptor has sent a super chat with the link to the Viktor Orban interview. Thank you. I will go check that perhaps tonight. All right, that is it for tonight, boys. Do I have some announcements to make? I will be appearing on a father's podcast called The Full House. Full House podcast. Let me check. It's on Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Mama JF, what's up?
Hey, you can live off of potatoes.
You confirmed that? You Googled it?
No, but I just want to say, oh, you're not laughing at me anymore when it's the famine. People, you need the people like me.
No one's laughing now. Mama JF claiming her full identity as a potato eater. Jonathan Dow says, JF, if humanity took TRP absolutely seriously and was able to abstain from genetic meddling, what would humanity look like after the equivalent amount of time TRP would take to have finished? That's talking about from a window of 10,000 year to 1 million year. What if TRP doesn't happen? Well, perhaps you can... There's no answer to this if you don't know what the future ecology looks like. So first and foremost, it depends on the future ecology. And who knows, with these fucking weirdos out there and their sexual tastes, who knows where humanity will be taken? Because let me remind you that sexual choice and sexual selection is what shapes us. It's what, just because men were attracted to beautiful women, that's why beautiful women today are there. Now, if you start having these weird sexual choice in society and a lot of the masses adopt them, like like those people who are attracted to someone who you can't tell if they're a male or a female, that has consequences. We may be fighting, and if they do win the reproductive race, which I don't think they will, so not a dramatic problem, but if these people were to win the reproductive race, we would end up having a gender-neutral, sexually monomorphic species. I don't think that would happen. Now, you ask, what would it look like, let's say, 1 million years from now, humanity? Maybe we can look at what we looked like 1 million years ago. What's the difference between 1 million years ago and the men of today? It's Homo erectus, Homo Neanderthals versus Homo sapiens. So, more hair, more... maybe more monkey-like appearance when you look at Homo erectus. But fundamentally, we didn't change that much. I mean, a little brighter, a little bigger brain, and a little straightening of the dorsal posture. That's pretty much it. So does that mean that we're still going the same direction? No. In 1 million years from now, we could have gone totally the opposite way. We could be back with more hair, less intelligence. But I would guess we're not going to be back with more hair, because technology will keep protecting us from the weather, so we don't need the big hair. So I guess that the hair trend will continue. The reduction of hair will continue, or stabilize at least. Whereas intelligence could very well revert, because I think we're a little too intelligent for the stupid world that we live in. That is it for tonight, boys. See you all tomorrow. Thank you. Mama JF, I was playing the outro music, but you wanted to say something?
No, you didn't get my joke! Because people said before that I'm a potato.
Yes.
So it's like the revenge.
And instead of saying that you're a potato, I said that you are a potato eater.
Okay.
Why did I say that?
It's like... Why?
I said that because if I had said that you were a potato... You would have come to me after the show and you would have said, how dare you call me a potato? And so I feigned a misunderstanding to respect you so that you couldn't then come to me and say, you disrespect me, JF. See how clever I am? See how painful it is to be intelligent? Thank you.